This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now. Oh, you're a hard one, but I know that you got your reasons. These things that are pleasing you can hurt you somehow. Don't you draw the queen of diamonds, boy. She'll beat you if she's able.
Hi, and welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here at Plains FM 96.9. My name is Louise, and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we'll talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is, and what AA can do to help. Then, we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who is an active member of AA. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every AA meeting.
Thanks, Louise. My name's Craig, and I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thanks, Craig. So what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is that it will do whatever it can to convince you that you do not have it. However, once it has a hold of you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model, and the victim is as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you are an alcoholic, you're at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognise it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is that it is an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of the disease. After having the first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying is, one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. And yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink, and this is what makes us powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety one day at a time. The program has a proven track record of helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Okay, for anyone who's just joined, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. And we're just about to interview an AA member who is going to share their experience with alcoholism. So, would our guests just like to introduce themselves?
Yeah, my name's Craig and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Craig, and welcome. Tell us, how old are you?
53.
Okay, and how long have you been sober?
21, just 20 years. 20 years, 3 months, 3 weeks, roughly.
Wonderful. And what do you do? What do you do for a job?
Self-employed. I've been self-employed for about 21 years.
Okay.
So I was an alcoholic when I started, but managed to, you know,
yep,
pull it together and 21 years of self-employment. So
okay, and any family?
Yeah, I've got two kids. I'm divorced now. I was married for 23 years and went through a divorce and, you know, again, still here, still sober.
Yep. And how old are your kids?
My kids are 23 and nearly 21. 21st to be had later this year, so.
Yep. Mm. And whereabouts are you from? Where did you grow up?
Grew up predominantly in Christchurch. I was born in Wellington, but moved to Christchurch when I was only a wee nipper. Schooled here and just lived here ever since. Cantabrian through and through.
Tell us a little bit about your childhood.
Childhood was really good. I came from a good home, two caring, loving parents. I didn't have any reason to make any complaint. So, you know, very normal in every respect.
Interesting, interesting. So tell us a little bit about how you started drinking.
I think the first recollection I really had was when I was out mowing the lawn one day and it was my 16th birthday and Dad decided to get me some beers because it was a hot day and I was mowing the lawns. And he bought me a crate of Reineck, which at the time was just a shitty lager beer that... you know, and I remember, well, I don't think he'd expect me to drink it all, but the end result was that I did exactly that. You know, I had the first one, the first became the second, the third, and right from that stage, you know, when I look back on it, I was an alcoholic and I just didn't know when to stop. So
tell us, what did the alcohol do for you, you know, from that first drink from and you know, from there on?
Yeah, I hear a lot about people say, you know, it took away all their fears and things. I just liked it. And, you know, I lost all ability to not drink once I'd started drinking. You know, I was never a one beer person, and at the end of the day, you know, once I had one, off I'd go on my merry journey for the day, and that was that. And you know, it's only now that I look back after so much sobriety and start to remember what it was truly like for me that I realise, you know, I didn't stop. I started, but I didn't stop. So.
And, you know, was it that it started socially? Were you a social drinker?
No. Look, from the time that I was 16 and started drinking, every time I drank, and we, you know, we had a lot of friends and we used to go to the bottle stores and whoever looked the oldest would go in and get the half G's filled up and, you know, and we'd just drink whatever we'd bought. And inevitably, ultimately, I probably had more than my fair share every time a coconut.
Mm.
Being a, you know, 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old youth, I guess, in Christchurch, you know, everyone seemed to drink pretty hard, but at the end of the day, you know, I was just part of it. But it was usually me the following day that was getting a bit of grief from people because of what I'd done and, you know, because I didn't know when to stop. So.
And were you ever a daily drinker?
Yes, very much so. Like my drinking progressed. That's the one thing, you know, I heard a lot over the years in the AA meetings, how it's such a progressive disease. And for me, you know, I often tell the story about, you know, towards the end of my drinking, you're getting up in the morning and you're going to the beer fridge in the garage and you are standing there staring at it, looking at it. And I didn't want to take it then, but I couldn't help myself, you know, and off came the lid of the first can and, you know, the remaining 40 cans behind it, just dreadful.
And so did your drinking change from being social to drinking alone? Did you ever?
Yeah, I did. I was sharing something with someone the other night and, you know, I was in the police for a long time in Christchurch.
Right.
And I had forgotten this completely, but I remembered having beer in my police locker.
Right.
And getting changed and having a beer before I went in to go to work, which is, you know, not flash, is it?
No. No. Okay. And so tell us a little bit more about, you know, what happened to you as a result of your drinking. Did you lose any jobs?
Or? Yeah, no. I maintained all the jobs that I've ever done. When I left school, I went into the customs department and didn't last there very long. I just wasn't progressing. But again, we'd had a few work functions and I was the you know, the clown who got absolutely smashed drunk. And inevitably, I decided this wasn't for me. And I applied for a job running a bar. And I ran a bar in town for about a year. And the bar had no turnover when I started. Had a phenomenal turnover by the time I'd finished. But the antics that went on in there were amazing, you know. And the owners of the place were really lovely people, but they liked to drink too. So there was, you know, a humongous amount of alcohol on tap readily available all the time. And I lasted there about a year, and then I went into the police. And I think I had a period where it quietened down a little bit, but inevitably, whenever I got on the booze, I stayed on it. And some of the experiences of drinking in that particular job, because it was a pretty heavy drinking social arena, and you know, there's nothing to go to jug session, and you know, that started at like 3:30 in the afternoon, and by 5 o'clock you're off your chops, and by 7 o'clock you'd be tipping a whole bottle of Black Zambuca down your gob, and you wouldn't think, you know. So, and I think the thing for me was the grief that you got the following day. I knew every time a coconut the following day I was going to be in trouble. It was just the depth that would vary, and you know, didn't have a lot of choice in it. Once I'd started, I was committed.
How did that make you feel? You know, what was the emotional toll?
It was mental. It's more looking back, you know, what my wife in particular at the time put up with was pretty horrendous. And I guess if it wasn't for the intervention of family, sometimes that would have come to a head and come to an end a hell of a lot earlier than what it did. Feeling crappy about yourself, you know, you knew every time a coconut, I used to wake up in the morning and go, why did I do that again? You know, because every single time it was bad. It was not stopping. I remember I was going out with a young girl when I was about 18 or 19, and we went to a work function, and I got so terribly drunk and spewed all the way down the side of her car, and she had to sit there in the car till about 4 o'clock in the morning before, you know, she could even wake me up. So I was literally, I was that passed out from alcohol. I didn't know where the hell I was or what I was doing. So it has a very adverse effect on everyone that's around you, and I think the biggest person it has the effect on when you look back at it is you. You know, you're scared and you just don't think you can stop, and you don't think there's life outside grog. You know.
And what made you realise, you know, at what point did you think it was a problem?
Like, I think I knew it was a problem for a lot longer than I was willing to admit it was a problem. And I had those periods where I tried not to, and tried to control the drinking, as you hear talked about so often. And you might manage that for a brief period of time, but inevitably you tip over again. You know, I'm alcoholic. It's in my genes, and it wants me to drink and drink to excess. So I didn't have a lot of success in the trying to cull it down.
And so did you ever actually try to stop as opposed to control?
No, not really. I used to have the odd thing I'd go to and say, all right, I'm not going to drink tonight. And, you know, that was usually successful the first 15 to 20 minutes of the event. You know, and then, oh, you know, I'll be right, I'll just have one. And then one, two, three. You know, we used to have some pretty amazing parties when I was in my teen years. I was flatting with a guy who recently passed away. And, you know, great parties, great functions. But I remember very vividly, you know, all the beer would be gone. We'd take the lid off a bottle of bourbon. You'd be drinking a bourbon and Coke. But by the end of the night, you know, the Coke was just a shadow of what was in the glass of the bourbon. And when you look back at all that and you go, you know, I went on a trip overseas. I was away with the same guy that I just mentioned. And I got alcohol poisoning. That's how bad it was. I was on a Kentucky tour. I was absolutely smashed. Doing some crazy things too, like the big bus that we were on had two sunroofs, one at the front, one at the back, and we were going down a motorway in Italy, and I was going right over the roof of the bus, doing probably, I don't know, 100 and something kilometres an hour. And the police tried to find us in Venice.
Wow.
Lucky for me, they didn't. We kind of got looked after and hidden. So I've had a very charmed life in that regard. I probably should have been dead a million times over.
So what was it that brought you to your rock bottom?
It was actually, I never really hit a rock bottom. I got an ultimatum. You know, my wife's got in touch with AA and said, you know, you're going or I'm going. And I thought, okay, I'm in a bit of a corner here, so I'll just play the game a little bit. And I got picked up by a couple of guys, one of whom's now been my sponsor for 20 years.
Wow.
And I was talking to him a couple of hours ago. We kind of help each other now. It's kind of a weird relationship in some regards. But I went along to the AA meeting. I really had absolutely no intention of giving up drinking. I was appeasing others. And I went to the meeting, and I really don't remember a heck of a lot about that first meeting either, but I got given a big book by my sponsor. And, you know, put that sobriety date into it. So I decided, okay, I'm going to have 3 months without drinking. I'm going to see if I can actually do this. And I don't know what it was in me, but for the first time in my life, I wanted not to drink for that 3 month period. And I got to 3 months.
Yep.
And then I thought to myself, shit, you got to 3 months. Can I get further than this? So I said, let's go for six.
Yep.
And then 6 months became a year, and a year became two and three and four and so on. And I lost the desire to drink. You know, I had friends come around because I was quite young at the time, and I had friends come around giving me a hard time. Oh, where's the booze? What are we having today?
Yeah.
So there was a lot of peer pressure to drink again. But things I was hearing in meetings, when I actually learned to listen and look for the similarities, you know, they stood out. And yeah, I've never drank. No, I have no desire to, but the last thing I'd want to do.
That's amazing. And I guess, you know, what were some of the things that you've done? You know, you've mentioned a sponsor, but what are some of the other things you've done to keep you sober?
Oh, look, I was talking to someone that's fairly new the other week, and I said, AA is not a spectator sport, right?
Okay.
You have to be engaged in the program. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am actively involved in it, and I'm a treasurer of one group. I was the treasurer of two. I'm now the secretary of another meeting. So that service is really critically important. Talking to people, you know, it doesn't matter if you do nothing else in AA, but go to meetings and talk to another alcoholic. And the thing that really fascinates me now is how someone can come who will be so completely misunderstood by someone outside the fellowship, yet finally their life makes sense to them because they've walked in the doors of AA. And it's not an easy thing to do for people. You know?
Yeah, what was it like? Was it like that for you in the very beginning?
Yeah, lost, I guess. You know, you don't want to. Like, what's life like without booze? It's a scary thought. You know, all my friends are going to go out, they're going to have drinks, we're going to have birthday parties, we're going to have weddings and all those things. How do I not drink? You know, it's because I've learned to drink very, very well. I'm an absolute professional at that. How do I begin to live my life sober? Because there's no manual for that, you know? And it's a difficult transition for people to make, because I think there's this absolute fear, and I know I had that fear of how will I live the rest of my life without drinking. You know, I originally never intended to. I intended to get absolutely smashed when my wife died. Didn't matter whether it was a 75, 85, 95 years. You know, I was planning that far in advance.
Wow.
And, you know, now it'd be the last thing I'd want.
So tell us, tell us about your life today.
It's wonderful. You know, I've had some pretty tough times of being self-employed. I've had a lot of financial things over the years that have come up, you know, and that's, I think, true of anyone. I know lots of different people in different businesses, and they are a struggle. And I often, you know, I love in The Promises where it talks about fear of economic insecurity will leave us. And it's actually true, and I had that explained to me in more detail by a guy one night. You know, it's not that you're going to go and win the bloody lotto and all the rest of it. But all those fears become manageable and controllable, and your life just gets better. You know, I remember some of the big events, like my daughter when she was very young had open heart surgery. She had a hole in the heart, and she had double reflux in the kidneys, and there was a lot going on. But I was sober.
Yeah.
You know, and well, actually, I wasn't sober at the time. To be fair, looking back on that, I got sober very shortly after that.
Sure.
So my kids have never really seen me drink, which is a good thing. I got to a point in my life where it was messy, you know, and looking back now, you know, would I have stopped any earlier? No, probably not. You know, it took what my ex-wife did to get me into AA, and then learning to want the sobriety came with that. So I was lucky.
So what is it, you know, what is it like today, you know, what's it done for your self-esteem and your confidence?
It's been an interesting journey, you know. AA is just about, it's a program for living for me. You know, I talk to a lot of newcomers who ask me the question about that, and I'm like, you know, I didn't want to be one of those that replaced drinking with AA. You know, I want to have a life.
Sure.
And I have a lot of things that go on in my world outside of AA. I have friends outside AA, but I'm not embarrassed about being an alcoholic. Anyone that asks me, I'll tell them, you know. I recently met a girl who I'm sort of seeing a bit at the moment. It was one of the first things I told her, you know, because if I don't tell people that, I can't fit them into my life, you know. It's some regards you might think AA can become a little bit selfish, but the balance it gives you in life if you, you know, learn it is remarkable. It took me through the death of my father, which was probably one of the biggest events, and I didn't drink.
Wow.
every bit of turmoil under the sun that you could ever wish for.
Yep.
And I've maintained sobriety through that. And, you know, where I'm really, really lucky today, it's something I never think about. You know, it does pass. That craving does pass, believe it or not.
And so some of the things that you've done, you know, during those times, what, tell us a little bit more about those.
Well, you know, managing a lot of staff within a company. I guess just living life, really. On, you know, I haven't done anything remarkable, like, you know, I'd love to fly to the moon, but I haven't been asked to do that yet.
Yeah.
I guess the accolades for me is watching my two kids grow up to be amazing. You know, because they both are, and you know, joys of family. I'm lucky. I enjoy what I do for a living, and that's been a big thing for me. You know, I'm a pretty simple person. I don't really need a lot, and I just enjoy life. And AA's delivered me that unquestionably. So.
Tell us a little bit about, you know, what is a spiritual, what does a spiritual program mean to you?
Yeah, it's interesting actually. I shared a wee while ago, I was coming back from Auckland and I got on a plane, well, I was about to get on the plane, but the seat that it had allocated me off the machine, I didn't want that seat because I like to fly a bit further in the plane, so it changed from seat 27 to seat 14. And when I was sitting in my seat, I was actually seated next to two Catholic bishops, one retired, one current. And then they introduced me to, we were talking to them, lovely guys, and they were coming down for the ordainment of the Catholic bishop in Christchurch. And they introduced me to another guy who'd come over from Rome who happened to be best mates with the Pope. So it was kind of most amazing, you know, flight experience that I've ever had. And I took the guys back to the house they needed to get to in Christchurch when I got home, because I guess I didn't want to let go of it. And they said to me, you know, we're going to say a prayer for you. And they have no idea probably how much that meant to me, you know. You know, I believe in God, I believe in a higher power, I believe in all those things. I'm not a particularly religious person. I don't have to wear the T-shirt and, you know, rock the whole scene in that regard. But there's a huge amount of spirituality in our program.
Mm.
And I guess that all comes with opening your eyes to it all. You know, I remember you can sit in a meeting with your eyes closed and your ears closed, or you can sit in a meeting and you can open them. And then when you open your eyes and your ears, you'll start to open your heart. And when you do that, things will change.
And has that changed for you over the years?
Yeah, I'm very very fond of my serenity, you know, and that's something I sought in the program for a long time.
Yep.
There's not much that phases me, as a matter of course. I don't get upset about things. I don't get short with people. So those are the elements that I like. Again, program for living.
You know?
I get told off every now and then. You know, I'm not a saint, and my sponsor certainly can deliver me some pretty harsh punishment sometimes. But at the end of the day, to be in this program, you have to be honest. If you can't be honest with yourself, then who can you be honest with? So.
And you know, finally, what would you suggest for any listeners out there who think they may have a drinking problem?
I think, you know, it is bloody hard to accept it, and you know, you don't have to drink. This is the thing, and you don't have to be a raving alcoholic with a trench coat on sitting in a park before you make a decision not to drink. And you know, when I look back, it's really simple for me now to see. When I drink, I create trouble, usually for myself. So therefore, I have a drinking problem. And whether you're having, you know, three cans of beer that you didn't want to have, or five cans of beer, or that bottle of wine, the only thing I'd say to people is take an hour out of your day and go to a meeting. And, you know, you'll be welcome with open arms. It is not an embarrassing venture into the rooms. It feels like it, but it isn't. You'll get in there. And if you find what I've been lucky enough to find, and it keeps you sober, just because you don't want to drink, that's the only criteria you need to have.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Craig, for coming on the show and sharing your story with us.
You're welcome.
For our listeners, if you've related to anything that you've heard or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web at www.aa.org.nz or call us on 0800 AA Works. There are over 60 meetings a week in Canterbury, so it's likely there's one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experiences. Our show airs every Monday at 6 p.m. on Plains FM and repeats on Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. You can find podcasts of all our past shows on the Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening, and remember, if you want to drink, that's your business, but if you want to stop, we can help. You don't have to do it alone. We'll now close the show with the Serenity Prayer, as we do in every AA meeting. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9.
Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now. Oh, you're a hard one, but I know that you got your reasons. These things that are pleasing you can hurt you somehow. Don't you draw the queen?